Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Today we have Heather Jackson, costume designer and costume coordinator. We have Allison Duke, costume technician and seamstress. We have our own Madeline Archer, wardrobe supervisor. These ladies do more than this, but we've asked them to come together today and take us through the process from concept to the set or stage. I want them to shed some light on the wardrobe department, because some sectors of our industry, we don't work with wardrobe departments on a day-to-day basis, and therefore we can dismiss the intricacies or just not understand what it takes to integrate wardrobe into your event. So ladies, introduce yourselves to us and we'll get started.
I'm Heather Jackson. I'm a costume designer. I've worked as a costume coordinator and a variety of other jobs within the field.
My name is Allison Duke. I'm from Houston, Texas. I've worked as a costume technician, seamstress, dye person, shoe room coordinator, dresser, all kinds of things.
And of course, if you've listened to the show before, you've probably heard me, Madeline Archer. I mostly work as a wardrobe supervisor, but I've also worked as a seamstress in costume shops and a dresser on various shows and all sorts of stuff. So,
well, thank all you ladies for being here. And Heather, why don't you get us started with the concept side of this?
Great. So as a designer, I'll usually dive in early on with the basics of reading the script and talking to the director, find out if there's already an existing concept or plan. And then kind of where you start with the initial concept can be a variety of places. There can be an image that inspires the world of the show. It can be a very realistic show. And then you're really shaping real people, which honestly sometimes is harder than a kind of a big concept show, which is fun to imagine, but you control the vision versus a really real people, because everybody kind of knows what a popped collar means or a French tuck or however people wear their clothes. People make associations that they don't have the intricacy of knowledge in other shows. But really, it's kind of taking the story and making those people real. So for me, it's about whether I'm starting with creative inspiration or historical inspiration, how do I take those clothes that we see in pictures and research and develop them into a complete identity for a person? That's, you know, once it's from research, it may go right to a rendering if I'm really creating the picture and I need to represent it to a shop that I'm communicating with, to a design team that I'm selling on my idea. Other times it might be just a collage of inspiration that I or someone on my team takes shopping and finds things that have the energy of it, because I'm creating the energy of real people. That's what I like to say a lot of the time, because it's kind of can be anything. And at the end of the day, we want to make them real to the audience, whether it's realistically real or all rounded human beings in or creatures or whatever, but all rounded characters in a fantastical show.
So Heather, how long does this creative process take? I mean, this is not something that somebody comes to you one day and then 3 days later, you're ready to go.
No, very rarely. Although it's been known to happen that you're pulled into a very quick project that either didn't ever find a designer or lost a designer or other situations. But usually, professionally, it's ideally several months. You're often working at least half a season ahead, maybe 3 to 6 months. On the scale of like opera, it can be over a year. Having worked on several, I know that that process can be year and a half, 2 years of conversation and then shopping and then, you know, research and idea development and then long fittings, and like that can really stretch out. Just depends on, usually the process length is often kind of comparable to the length or to the size of the organization, the complexity of the project, the budget involved, whether you're building a show or shopping a show. So a 4-person modern day dress for mid-size regional theater, you might work half a season ahead. You might get the call in March and do it in the fall, get the call in the fall and do it in the spring. But again, other shows, it could be, I've done it in less than a month, sometimes less than a few weeks.
Yikes.
But usually it's 3 to 6 months or half a season or more. Ideally, you know, a full season ahead what you're doing, but it also depends on the size of theaters you're working with.
Gotcha. So once you get this concept together and you've presented it to the producers of the event, where does it go from there?
So that's a good question. Sorry, it's my little pause. So from the kind of approval, like get your design team together and everyone on the same page, the director loves it. It will go either to me to usually back to me to start collecting things. If it's a large show or period show where I'm doing rentals, it will be going and visiting rental houses or coordinating them, sending pieces based on research. If I'm shopping it, it's me out shopping. In a grand scheme world, I'm working at big enough shows where I have a team of shoppers helping, but normally it's me. And I actually like that. That's one of the things that having done one or two partial virtual things, I miss going into stores and flipping through clothes and being inspired and touching them. So that's a big part of it.
Sometimes you find things you don't anticipate finding going by yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. Please dive in. Being in person, feeling the clothes, you get inspiration, you find something that you can adapt or that's perfect, but you wouldn't have thought of that. As my mentor often said, she doesn't render the extreme detail of pattern because she tends to find that energy of a character and then take that. And then when you go fabric shopping, you see something that's nothing like you pictured, but exactly what the energy and the concept and the feeling of what you did is. So often this is the stage of fabric shopping, of communicating with a shop. If I'm working with a shop, this is the stage usually once it's approved, before a lot of shopping has gone on, it's kind of maybe started, but it's also the point where you come in and you show the designs to the shop and start consulting with drapers and tailors if you have them, which is a luxury. We all love to have shows when we have a shop because they're so amazing and can do so much more than we by ourselves can. And so this is the point where you bring that design in and you get ideas, because you could say, this is the end result that I want. And I'm thinking this or this, but what do you, with your skills and knowledge, what do you think, how do you think it should work? What do you think will help the structure? Like that kind of technical skill that I may have conceptually known from other shows I've worked on, but I might be not the first idea I think of. So really this is a good stage when it's kind of the idea is approved and I'm starting to touch fabrics and pull clothes that I want to start talking to the other creative people involved in my bubble of the show to really get that those other ideas, because it is like so much a team effort when you have a show big enough to have a shop support or a design team or an assistant or anyone else in the room with you, because this is the point where those ideas have to become real and it can happen so much better with that kind of collaboration.
Yeah. And I know sometimes designers don't really know how clothes are constructed too. And that can make things really challenging in the shop because they're like, I want it to do this. And you're like, okay, normally fabric doesn't act that way.
Yeah. Or sometimes they don't necessarily know, like, okay, you want this fabric to do this thing. Well, here's the bad news. Physics doesn't work that way. Yeah. You want something super structured, but you've given me this gorgeous silk charmeuse. Yeah. And you want it to stand 3 feet tall off the shoulder. Okay. That must be a beautiful planet you're from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how do we do that? Do we stick a foam cone underneath it on the shoulder? Yeah, do
millinery wire, fishing line, you know, I mean... Or do we choose, you know, maybe can we find an organza or something that will give us more structure, you know, or line it with something, da 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 da. Because, you know, sometimes people just don't know.
Yeah. I work a lot in education, working with graduate students, and that time we spend in the shop with them is so valuable, because when they come in and we interview students, like, do we have to notice? So it was like, you should understand the basics of how clothes go together, because it's going to make your life so much easier. Cause I've built plenty of shows myself, but it's not, I want to know how to do it better. Mm-hmm. And I want my students to know that they need to understand those physics, like what fabric will do. They have to understand choosing the right fabric, because it means they don't have to walk in a shop and be educated 5 steps back. It means they've picked the right fabric for the project, and then they can bring it into their team and the team be like, yeah, I see where you're going. I would recommend that you use this kind of thing or this closure, this support. But they've already started with that groundwork, because you're right. That's so important to understand. And, you know, the shop can make it better and better and bring you great ideas. But I think young designers who don't spend that time getting to know fabric and the basics of construction really hinder their ability to communicate and get the desired results, because they will pick things that aren't going to do that. And we've had students do that, pick something that's completely impractical. And it was such a fight and a fight to get the fabric to do it. And it was so not working, to the point that a week before tech, they went out and had to over budget to buy a whole nother bundle of wool and start the whole project over again. Because the tailor, who was exceptionally good, was like, this is not working. It's it's got some weird interfacing that's melting. And we really wouldn't know that till we start ironing it. But things like that, kind of technical things that really are important. Because I think, well, we don't have to know how to do it as well as any of the trained artists who are these incredible skills. We really can, tire ourselves into a loop going in if we don't at least know the basics.
Shops can work small miracles, not giant ones.
They work some amazing miracles. I do gotta say,
I've had designers who have actually been like, okay, I know this is the wrong thing for this, but trust me, I know it's wrong, but we're gonna make it right, and here's how we're gonna do it. And that makes me feel so much better, because that tells me, okay, you've actually made stuff, you know how to make stuff, so I'm going to go with you. I'm going to trust you, even though I know that this thing right here is not made to do this thing.
At least they thought about it.
It looks kind of weird. Huh? Yeah. Once you know the rules, you know how to break the rules. And that's actually really exciting. Mm-hmm. When a designer comes to you and is like, be not afraid. I know what I'm doing. It's crazy, but it's going to work. And it's like, okay. I'm gonna trust you. And then it turns out fine. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Great.
Nobody else. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's the next step? We went from concept design to starting to gather all the pieces, starting to engage the costume shop, which is where you find the costume technician.
So when you get to this point, from the designer perspective, at least, everything just kind of comes together. You have to get not everything just comes together, but this is the point, you bring it all together. You get all the things that you've purchased, you get all the things you've rented, the things that are in process being built. You do the fittings, which is a huge learning time. You learn a lot about the way the clothes move, different comfort levels of actors. You spend a lot of time kind of understanding how it plays into their characters. It's very valuable time. It can be a little intense. It's definitely, you have a lot of personalities going on in there, but actually that's really important, because they will bring back feedback about what's happening in the rehearsal hall that you're not always getting in the technical notes of, they need shoes for this scene. I'm like, yeah, but no one told me they're crawling across the floor, or that this is the scene where they get, when they're pulled around, or that they're emotionally bereft so deeply that they would not be wearing a bright red, whatever. So it's important, because you get a lot of that from the page and from your research and from conversations with the director. But until you kind of have those conversations, you don't always know really how deep it might impact it. And clothes are a mirror of our personality most of the time, whether they're the true mirror or a piece of armor we're wearing. So the fittings are huge. And then let the shop work their magic. Or, if you're a one person show, as sometimes we are, you're working your own magic. And then you go into tech and bring your crew along, and everybody kind of all hands on deck.
That's not some miracle that just happens. Is this where, Allison, is this where your team comes in, or is this Madeline's team? Where does this go from?
Our team starts to overlap about the time that fabrics start coming in. You're going to have probably, if you're lucky, probably a design assistant who's helping create basically little packets of, okay, here's these three fabrics that are going to go into this piece for this character. Here's the trim, and they create a swatch template that's like, here's how it goes together. This is the skirt. This is the blouse. This is the. And there's lots of meetings with the drapers to make sure everybody is on the same page of how things are going to be put together. Is this dress going to be all one piece? Is it going to be, a top and a skirt? Is it going to have a peplum that goes inside to hold everything down? Blah, 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 blah.
Does it need to be quick rigged?
Does it need to be quick rigged? Oh my God.
Fine, water, food, waterproof, fireproofed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we using buttonhole elastics or ties that go through metal loops? Because that's a smart idea. not bitter. you know, okay, you've given us this taffeta. When we sew it, we get all these little pull lines. What do we need to do about that? Or is that okay? How we're putting these fake paniers in these pre-made romantic skirts. How big do they need to be? How little do they need to be? Oh, now that we put the taffeta on it instead of the muslin, we're having to add kickers. Is that okay? So we start doing that. And there's a, depending on the show and how much time you have, there's a mock-up phase. So you get to see things in muslin. You get to, you know, tinker with the fabric and kind of sculpt it into whatever it is. If you're doing a completely new build, or if it's a bought show, you get to start tinkering with, you know, okay, we're going to take in this coat. Okay, actually, I want to rig this petticoat to this skirt so that, you know, it just kind of flows in a certain way, or it hangs exactly 3 inches below, or, you know, that kind of thing. And yes, fittings are a huge thing, especially in dance, because sometimes, you know, you start out and you get into the mock-up phase and everybody's happy. And then, you know, things like you have a dancer, the men dancers coming in asking for shorts all of a sudden, flesh shorts under their little loincloth, their Greek Spartan loincloth things. And you're like, but why though? You were fine 3 weeks ago. And then you finally, you know, have the dancer, you look them in the eye, you say, okay, what is the real issue here? And they're like, okay, there's this part where we're facing upstage, we're in a plank, and we hike our leg to 90 degrees with our butts facing the audience.
Oh no.
In a thong. And it's like, oh, see, we didn't know you were gonna do that. We didn't either. Mm-hmm. So now we gotta fix this. Okay, cool. That's fine. But tell us these things. You know, and sometimes you don't find that out, especially in a dance piece where they're creating it like right down the hall, right now. or, you know, you find out, you know, you put a couple that's going to be on stage for a big dance, and one of them has this big panier skirt, one of them has this gorgeous, like, pseudo rococo coat. The guy comes in to look, and they're all excited, and he stops short, looks down, and says, "Where is your butt?" And you're like, what are you talking about? You know, because just a minute ago, you were happy and excited to see this costume. And they're like, no, I have to lift her and I have to be able to grab her butt. And I'm like, we were told there would be no lifts. No, there's lifts all over the place. Really?
Yikes.
So cool. Well, I guarantee you her butt is in there. I don't know what else to tell you more than that. So, you know, you find out those little things throughout the fitting process. And then as you kind of get closer and closer, you get down to more of the nitty gritty details of, you know, okay, are we putting this trim here or here? You know, okay, you know. And then, of course, you get the designers who sit there with like three trims on the same, you know, little peasant girl. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I like this one, but I also like that one. What do you think? And it's like, is that my job? I mean, I like that one. Oh yeah, that one looks good. Okay. And you're like, okay, do you want it inside the seam line or outside the seam line or right on top of it? And she's like, well, what do you think?
Not my job.
That is about my pay grade, ma'am. Then I don't want that kind of responsibility.
No.
I like it inside the seam line because if we have to alter it, it can stay where it is.
There is that. Yeah. If you can convince them to make the alterations easier in the long run, that is always a plus.
Yeah, no. And that's something that, you know, is always in discussion, especially say in dance. It's like we make these things to, you know, A, fit several different people during shares, but also it needs to be something that we can alter to fit people later on down the road. So they might want some, you know, sleek, super tailored, super fitted silhouette. And it's like, that is only ever going to fit one person. We can't do that. We can't do that. We would love to.
That right there, the when clothes are designed or built, it's one thing to have the luxury to build them custom for pieces, but it does make life really hard later when another designer or wardrobe team is trying to reuse said garment. Madeline and I are quite familiar with this one.
See, that works. That works in a theater setting, say. like at the Alley where they have, you know, resident actors. And it's like, okay, we can afford to tailor this to one of our company members because he's not going to change, you know, in the next 4 or 5 years. And we, it's this time period, he can totally wear this again.
Yeah.
Or she can totally wear this dress again, because yeah, we're totally going to do another thing set in the 1940s, you know, within the next 10 years. And her body's not going to change dramatically. Yeah.
But then sometimes...
But then opera and dance are completely different animals.
Sometimes I've seen, like, working at the opera, there was one show that came in, and I don't remember which show it was, but it came in from an overseas company, and all of the costumes were too small for, as has been lovingly referred to as our Texas-sized company, where... the costumes were built for people who are size two, size, you know, extra small, and some of our people maybe size like 14 or 3XL. And you're like, okay, now the shop has to build new stuff because there's no way you can alter that much.
Yeah. That's like when we were working with costumes that are off a Broadway show, and they are not built initially, they weren't built to also be the tour costumes. You had one. Maybe two copies of a dress that were built to the exact specifications of your lead and the understudy, who are beautiful Broadway ladies, but are very petite Broadway ladies. And then you bring it into a local regional production and you're setting those clothes in the road. I'm like, this is a boned 17th century gown. There's no seam allowance to put this from a size zero to a size four.
Yeah.
Like not, I'm not talking, you know, these are not, you know, these are all very petite women also, but they're just not... Their shoulders aren't in the exact same spot as the other person's, and none of that boning is going to work.
Yeah.
And so that luxury of being able to build that specific to that is, you know, cool that you have it, but you kind of make these costumes almost unusable or infuriatingly frustrating to alter in the future when you do that. Yeah. And as a designer, like, I would love people to build things with practicality, because I've worked in enough theaters where we're renting and borrowing and pulling from stock, because even with all the budget in the world, you very rarely are building a 65 costumes for a large ensemble show. You need to reuse things, and I support the ability to adapt things. Absolutely. I don't want to drive wardrobe and shop teams crazy.
Yeah.
No, I remember Serge always said, we are not building haute couture.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because, you know, sometimes you do that, and then later on down the road, when your wardrobe supervisor and your dressers get hold of it, you have things like two versions of a red leather corset, and only one of them is quick rigged, and unfortunately that's not the one that fits the actor for the 30 second quick change.
That was fun.
But
we have more stuff.
And quick rigging is always a big debate, depending on, you know, what it is, because some people want Velcro. Why can't we do Velcro? Because it's noisy.
Yeah.
And your fabric that you chose is super super delicate, and it will shred it.
Yeah. You can't use heavy duty Velcro in order to hold a chiffon dress on somebody. You're going to shred the chiffon. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then of course there's, you know, conversations that happen once you actually get onto the stage and into the tech process. Say, you know, somebody, you know, had an alteration where somebody went a little too far and the pants ripped the butt out during a plié.
Oops.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, or, thankfully it was tech, but whatever. Or then you find out that taffeta on net is really loud.
Nutcracker.
Yeah.
2 days before we open.
Oh.
Those skits are so loud. Tell the orchestra to play louder. I don't know what else to tell you.
I love it.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then you also have the communications there that just design teams at that point, because suddenly you're on the set, and I've had instances where they had, you know, Lady Lily with this beautiful 20s dress and had insets of silk chiffon throwing her stuff down her knees on a set of stairs that no matter how many times they reassured me were smooth and finished, and we had huge pulls all the way up the chiffon on the first dress rehearsal. This was like the showstopper number, like the big comes out and does three spins because the dress is like in the spotlight. So the shop was able to smooth it out from that, and then I was like, if they're not going to get the set smooth by tomorrow, you need to change the blocking. And thankfully the director and choreographer team did, because they respected the dress and the clothes and our hard work. But that's a conversation where sometimes you have to be like, okay, these two elements are not working together. So we need the third party, the powers that be, to make a change, to respect, because otherwise it's going to be shredded before we even open the show.
Yeah.
We were lucky, but you know, those kind of things you suddenly realize when you're on a set that there's nails sticking out, that the doorways are too small for the said large panniers.
Yeah. We had issues with, was it Clara's nightgown, where they were doing these like things where Drosselmeyer and the prince would sweep her along the floor to do these lifts, and the nightgown was really, really long. So the first night of dress rehearsal, she put her foot down and it ripped the bottom of the skirt because it was ankle length, and we didn't know that that was what they were going to do. So
oops.
Yep. All that super delicate custom block printed cotton just went. But you only find these things out when they happen. So at least it happened, you know, during rehearsals, not opening night.
Yeah.
And I want to point out, for the point of me saying that there are others in this industry that might run into a wardrobe department, like they don't do this on the day-to-day, but this particular show has them involved with a wardrobe department. A lot of what you're talking about crosses over into other industries like a fashion show and film. And although what I find interesting and why Madeline and I discussed doing this was that these are the extremes that we find. So it's good to hear these extremes and then translate them into, yeah, this could happen on a fashion show. Yes, this could happen on a film set, and hear those things. So I just wanted to stop and point that out. You ladies are doing a fantastic job. Keep going.
Great.
Well, and I mean, we've kind of hit the point where Allison's department of, you know, working in the shop kind of overlaps with like my department, which is the wardrobe supervisor, which is really the backstage job.
And my other job, which is kind of coordinator.
Yeah.
Organizing everything to hand it off to you.
Yeah.
And eventually myself, because I'm a dresser.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Well, and Heather's worked as a costume coordinator as well, which that's a job that I've never done. And in some ways, even working within the department, it's still somewhat of a mystery, because it's like, I know parts of what you do, but not all of what you do. So actually, maybe it's better if Heather and Allison, both of you, tell us more about like what a costume coordinator does in order to get it to backstage so that your wardrobe supervisor can take over.
Sure. I think there's many different variations of that. So I'll give you the kind of one I had, but I'd like to hear what Allison does. I think depending on whether you're doing it internally in the kind of that translation within the flow of a project in one theater, or for example, I was the coordinator, basically handed a finished show coming out of New York and adapting it to a tour. So I'm handed show in a box, but with very different structures. The show that we had the costumes from had many more cast members. So instead of the quick changes weren't quite so tight, because it was one person going off and another person coming on, and not one person going off and changing and coming back as another person. So there were like tons of accessories. I had to get kind of the Bibles and this and all the pieces together and analyze it and figure out, okay, here's what everything looked like originally. And we needed to do the same thing, only simpler. So figuring out what can be cut, and then kind of taking measurements of all the existing clothes, because we didn't have the cast Bible of the original show, just photos and clothes. So it was me and assistant measuring everything in a warehouse and tagging it with rough sizes, so that we can then bring six jackets that fit the style of a scene, and knowing we could not go with like the costume designer chose this color and this fabric for this actor and this character. We had to be like, okay, this was the end goal of that character. This was their class, their status, their purpose in that scene. So which of the six coats that might be in that person's size are closest to what they had, and kind of playing a matching game, and then translating all that into a flowchart of paperwork of, okay, this person has all of these pieces. Can we use one shirt all the way through? Can we, you know, it's kind of seeing it as the designer, but being handed an existing package and trimming out the fat and rejiggering the pieces to figure out what worked with everybody. So I kind of was a little bit of a design eye, a lot of coordination, a lot of just thousands of fittings of thousands of clothes, and being like, this is as close as we're going to get to address this size and this style. So we're going to have to make these alterations work. and then hiring a team of stitchers and kind of the whole package. It was a very weird project in that regards, but it was that kind of idea of taking the whole show together and sifting through the pieces and putting together a puzzle so that other people could follow the lines of thought and then take it to the next step of, okay, this character building tracks on stage and back and so forth, which the wardrobe team then did.
This sounds like a project, Heather, where someone had, and this is exactly why I want to talk about this. This kind of situation is where someone looked at this show and said, hey, it came off Broadway. It's all together. We don't need to do anything. Let's just grab all that stuff. Let's throw it into the mix of the tour. You know, let's pack it all up, push it all in there, and we're good to go. I mean, that's what it sounds like you got thrown into. Yeah. Am I right?
Yes. I was basically like, well, you have all the clothes already. And I was like,
the point of saying we need to understand what mm-hmm. happens in a wardrobe department so that these kind of things don't happen, because ultimately that probably costs them more money than it saves them.
I had dozens and dozens of hours of me and whoever I could, literally friends who had no costuming experience but could hold a tape measure, coming into a warehouse with me and being like, okay, these 65 coats need to be sorted by type, style, and then need to have a very quick rough chest measurement. And 2 out of 3 are not necessarily going to fit the way I think they're going to fit, but I got to narrow down my options somehow. Wow. And then trips back to the warehouse because we were wrong, or someone was recast, or someone needed a new understudy, or someone was going to be recast halfway through. And because there were way too many clothes from the show to go, not just to the space we were moving into for the run, but even less could go on the road. Well, we actually got what we brought into the warehouse, into the theater, to the amount they wanted to go on the road. Like, we didn't have to trim much from that point, but it was huge because this was like 65 cardboard boxes and 12 big professional mind blank wagons.
Well, and you say cardboard boxes, and probably most people think about like your little like 2-foot box at the most. So maybe expand on that.
Yeah, about 50 of those, and then about a dozen wardrobe boxes, it tells me.
Outside the big tall ones with the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Outside of the 12 wooden wagons. And then we were told.
And the wagons, that's for clarification if people didn't know. That was.
Oh, the, they're, yes, gondola. I think we had, 6 could go on tour? 8?
Which they're quite large, too.
They're quite
large.
So yeah, they're like full a closet of clothes.
They're a closet, 5 to 6 foot span. Some were deeper than others.
Yeah.
Some are taller than others, which helped if you had really long dresses. We kind of divvy them up by that, long coats and things like that. But we had boxes of accessories and boxes of shoes. I mean, we're talking probably 10 times as much came into the warehouse as could go on the road with the show.
And for the technical people out there, producers, production managers, you're talking about a 24-foot truck of just wardrobe. At least. I got that from the scenic guy over here. He's like, at least a 26-foot truck full of stuff. So this is half your semi.
Yeah.
Or more than half your semi and just wardrobe.
It was, the original quantity we had to pull from. They were like, you have so many options. I'm like, yeah, I have to go through all of it, inventory it all and measure it all and then figure out what we can actually use. So yeah, you think it's useful. It might have saved us in the construction time because things are beautifully constructed. But again, we're talking custom made to someone a completely different size of anyone we cast in the new show. Mm. So then we kind of double and triple our work in stitchers. And they're like, oh, you can just throw it on. I was like, no, you can't.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Anyway, we are hashing a tire drama of that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, from my side, I've only worked tours as a dresser. And it's usually them coming here. So I don't get to know all of that. So that is fascinating to me as far as coordinating. In my experience, it's more of so much paperwork, documenting everything, because you have to make sure that your dresser knows, okay, for this look, you've got the pants, you got the blouse, you got the shoes, you've got the bracelet, you've got the hat, you've got the this, you've got the that. And because there's a lot of, like, I guess, you find these little missteps or like gaps in knowledge where I know this. Of course I know this. This is obvious that she wears this thing with that look. And then you see it in rehearsal and you're like, why is she not wearing the thing? I don't know, she should be wearing the thing. And then you look at the paperwork and it's like, oh, because it's not on the paperwork. And there's no reason for the dresser to know, having been on both ends of that scenario. And then, of course, as a coordinator, you say for the ballet, you're pulling out a show that you've done 150 million times. And that's always a negotiation in building a ballet, is if you're going to have a group of, say, Gamzati sisters, there's 13 on stage. How many do we get to build? Because they need to mix and match, because you have multiple castings for multiple nights. Two bodies are alike. You've got to make sure that people can share things, because Susie Q may not go on Thursday and Betty Rubble has to be able to fit into it. But oh crap, she can't wear that. She has to wear
Wilma. I can hear you struggling not to say the real names.
Yeah. And then of course people are like, well, why can't she just wear Magic Pretty Bunny Girl over here? And it's like, because Magic Pretty Bunny Girl can only wear that particular tutu ever, because her body is very, very specific and she can't wear anybody else's. And they're like, but why? And then you try to swap them in fittings and Magic Pretty Bunny Girl cries and is like, why did I do something wrong? Why do you want to put me in this thing that doesn't fit? And it's like, okay, see, this is why we don't put Magic Pretty Bunny Girl in things that are not for Magic Pretty Bunny Girl. You know who I'm talking about, and I love it.
Yeah.
But no, and it's one of those things, it is not her fault. It is not her fault that her body is her body.
Right.
She didn't sign up for that. It just happened. But then of course there's the negotiation between the shop and the people who hold the purse strings of, well, we would like a spare to be able to, you know, enable shares better. And they're like, but that'll cost money. And I'm like, but it'll also cost money to constantly be altering things.
Yeah.
To make things fit for people. Yeah. So you can either spend the money up front or you can spend the money down the way. Pick one. You know, and regardless of however that happens, you have to come up with all these share charts of, okay, night one, these people are coming here wearing this, these people are wearing that, da 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 da. And then, of course, you get the surprise recasting 3 days before you open, where that person is out completely from that piece. And you've got to go rejigger everything. So,
yeah, I would say definitely paperwork is something that crosses all sides of it. And I don't think outside of our department, people necessarily know quite how much. And also in terms of different jobs, I think one of the other things that is a really interesting kind of in-between position is an associate or an assistant designer, which can mean a different thing on any job. But on a lot of operas, the associate designer, having done that several times, it gets that joy of like going into every fitting and tracking all those little pieces. So that final list that comes down to the wardrobe crew is like, yeah, by the time you've been in 55 fittings, you know that so-and-so has to have silver gloves because so-and-so has gold gloves and these are their gloves. And you've kind of done all those little, like, check those little boxes and put those pieces here and here. And again, it's all in your head and it better be in your paperwork, because whoever has paperwork backstage is going to follow that paperwork. Spreadsheets and charts are your best friend.
So much documentation of every teeny tiny little thing. Like, no, the male genies wear the turbans with the gold jewel. The lady genies wear the ones with the blue jewel. And why is he getting fit in one with a blue jewel? Nope, put it back. And of course, the people, you know, sometimes doing the fittings are like, oh, I didn't know. I thought all the turbans were the same. And they're like, no, I know. It's okay. And then, of course, you get really weird things like having to translate German on the fly because they rented a show from Germany and nothing's in English.
Oh, okay.
So you get to make a vocabulary sheet for the dressers so that if they're looking inside at these tags and they're like, Handschuhe, what does Handschuhe mean? It means glove, by the way.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that this also gets complicated with, you know, a change that the director is making because he's sitting in the audience watching a rehearsal going on and go, you know, I really don't like the color gloves on that one. Let's change them, or little things that happen. And that has to be reflected on your paperwork, right? Yeah. Allison's like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Live document during tax. change it as you go, print a new one every night, send a new PDF every night. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I have wanted to fight people over spreadsheets.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
But you need to change that. Why? Because it changed in rehearsal last night. It is 5:30 in the afternoon and I have to send that to them. You couldn't have told me this when you came in this morning.
No, that would be too easy.
It is always worth typing up, sending all your notes at the end of the night, because the shop's going to beat you to it and they'll be much happier if they know. And you can always be like, this sounds crazy. I'll talk to you as soon as I get in. I've written that many times.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. No.
Going on. Call me about this note because I can't explain it in writing.
It's like, I know, don't freak out. We need to talk about this, but I'm putting it here so you know something is happening. I'm like, I'd rather give you the warning than blindside you 3 o'clock the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, one of the best things that happened at one point when a certain person was in charge of things was they would prioritize the notes list and be like, here's the ones you can work on. And then like at the bottom, it's like, these things are weird. I'll explain them when I get it. Don't touch them. They're on the rack. Don't touch them. Do all the other stuff. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Priorities.
So at that point, we've kind of made it backstage. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's kind of the point where really the wardrobe supervisor comes in, even before dressers. Because I know in my experience, like I actually work really closely with the costume coordinator after the point of paperwork being made, which I have had to make that paperwork before of like quick changes and stuff. It wasn't your fault. but at least it gave me an understanding of like what that paperwork entailed and how crazy it was, and it makes me very grateful that I don't have to do it on the fly again, because trying to do the paperwork while you're also trying to figure out who wears what and you're also doing the dress rehearsal at the same time is not fun.
I will say
that
is like, I have a list of notes that I would tell producers, and we've mentioned a few times, producers, if you're hearing this, one of those things is your wardrobe crew needs to be in way earlier.
Early. Not the day of the first dress rehearsal. Please.
Let us watch the show. Let us watch the show.
There was a
so
lot
we know what
left
the hell is going on.
Let's put it all together in one day. I'm like, oh no, no, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, okay, what was through that? What went wrong there?
Oh, there were so many.
It didn't go wrong.
There were right there. There were so many challenges. There was a huge lack of space and time. I wasn't given any wardrobe support outside of stitchers I recruited literally off Craigslist in desperation in the fitting spaces in the rehearsal hall, and was handing bags out the door to someone who answered my ad and hoping they brought them back.
Expensive and then, Broadway costumes.
Oh yeah, like $5,000 Broadway gowns.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you sent a... said things that sounded qualified. Bring it back in 48 hours, hopefully.
Please, sweet baby Jesus, let them bring it back.
Yeah. No, it almost killed me. But so we also had load in a few hours the night before the first day we were supposed to start tech of a whole brand new space that we didn't know how much space we actually had. They had no concept how much space these costumes took up. We
had a piano storage room.
Yeah, we had a piano storage room. The green room became the wardrobe room. Like there was no green room because there was just not enough space to do anything. It was a little better when we came back for a shorter long-term one because they cut it even smaller, but that was a whole other, like I had to like basically redesign the show with existing garments because we changed it so much at that point. But this first time around, we had loaded a day and they didn't want to hire the crew the extra day. And they thought I would be able to load in an entire show of costumes. And even with the shrinking down for the tour, this was still hundreds of garments and accessories by myself in a couple of hours across multiple floors in a brand new building that had no facilities, not enough racks, not enough anything. So we barely had clothes on racks in the right spaces. We didn't know what the right spaces were going to be until we ran the flow. We really didn't know all the quick changes ahead of time. Like I had a rough idea. We had one sit through designer runwear, tried to track them, but they changed constantly. Like there was just not enough time and knowledge and manpower to get the pieces together before the pieces were supposed to be on stage. And then I had to like be backstage doing alterations, run out, and they're like, and I need to be like, stop, we haven't run this change. We're gonna stand here a minute. Like I had to fight for those moments in the first tech because they were like, and run, I'm like, we have hundreds of quick changes. We need to stop. And this one's happening on stage with our two principal actors. So we're gonna walk them through it together because they're dressing each other and they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing is they're like, why is the quick change taking so long? Because you kept interrupting it and wouldn't let us run it. Or they get halfway through the quick change and it's like, okay, we're going to go back after they said, no, we're going to run the quick change. We're going to run the quick change. And then halfway through, let's go back. People are like in their underpants and it's like,
which costume am I putting back on? I'm like, I don't know either. Yeah.
And this is how people get concussions.
Yeah. But yeah. And I will say too, Heather, with that show, because I've actually gone a little more in depth on what happened on that show from my perspective in my interview on our podcast. So if anybody wants to hear more details about all of that fun times, feel free to check that out. But
wait, were you on that show where I got the concussion or no?
I filled in for you, but Heather and I worked, we met on this crazy show that she's talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I was about to say, there's so many crazy shows. It's hard.
There is that. But yeah, no, we met on that show and they brought me in as the wardrobe supervisor the same day as the first dress rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. And which that was the day after we, like 8 hours after we loaded everything into the building.
There was no organization. Fantastic. Because Heather had no time to do it.
So. Oh, bless you. Bless your heart. I am so sorry.
Oh,
it was a learning super curve. Fun. I will say there was a lot learned on that show. And coming like since that, the place where we house the costumes is actually in and of itself a company that does real tours, like well-organized tours off Broadway. And I've gone and done overhire in the warehouse in taking shows off the road and reorganizing them and going through all that paperwork. And the things I had to crash and burn learn over here, getting to see like the real paperwork and be like, okay, I started to get the idea, but oh my God, this is genius. Like learning from that, I was like, I kind of want to reverse that. I wish I had done that first, but you learn in weird ways in this job.
You really do. And that's like where I was going, where I said, like, I've had to create that paperwork on the fly for that show simply because the costume coordinator didn't have the time in order to prep that stuff, which is not her fault. Heather. Yeah. So it's not her fault, you know, it's at that point. But so now, like, when I get the paperwork from the costume coordinator, like, here at the Houston Grand Opera, where I work mostly now, I will tell you the paperwork is beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. Like when you first look at it, of course, like from an outside perspective, it's going to be the most confusing thing in the world. But as soon as you understand it, it is so perfect. And I think something that's really great is they actually have stage management involved in creating that paperwork. So like anytime that there's quick changes and stuff, stage management handles that paperwork and makes sure that everybody is on board. So you're not throwing all of that on like your costume coordinator and your wardrobe supervisor. Yeah. So it's actually really good to get other departments involved, you know, because we're not always able to sit out in the audience and watch because we're backstage dressing. So we might not know that the director has decided to change when a quick change is, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know if it's actually normal to have a stage manager involved.
It depends. I know that for ballet, it's normal because there's timing. Because everything is set to music, obviously. And I know in opera it is, because again, with the timing, that's how they give us our change sheets, is at this minute. And it's like, I don't know this music. What? Why are you telling me how far into the show this is?
Yeah.
As far as minutes are concerned, I'm not counting. But, you know, that's how they do it. But so, like, it is kind of difficult sometimes to get the stage manager to respond and give you the timing so that you can see where the quick changes are. But, you know,
but sometimes, and most of the time, usually if you ask nicely, you know, if like, if it's in a show that has music and you're like, I know the general time of this, can you give me like the lyric that I'm listening for?
Or usually if you ask nicely. Done before and you have archival footage, then you just sit down and you watch the archival footage and you take notes and, you know,
Yeah.
If you have questions, you go to the paperwork that is hopefully, you know, has everything documented, fingers crossed. Yeah. Or you talk to somebody who's done the show before, if they're still working there, you know, which works out pretty well sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they'll be able to tell you, okay, she's wearing this and this hat in the archival footage. They cut that hat because they fucking hate that hat. Oh, excuse me.
No worries. We're not censored.
They don't like that hat. So they cut it. Don't put it on her. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I found a really...
And then you get to dress rehearsal and they're like, hey, where's that hat she was wearing last time? And it's like, I thought you hated that hat and you cut it. Well, I mean, can we look at it? And it's like, it's in a box in another building because we don't use it. Okay, we'll bring it tomorrow.
Yeah. But that's like something with the tech and dress rehearsal when you have enough time. Like that's you actually, it's good because the costume department can then get an idea of if there's any changes that need to be made because, oh, well, they need to do lifts now and he can't find her butt, you know, or like, you know, the dress is too long because now we've decided that she's going to go barefoot, like stuff like that, you know, like those tech and dress rehearsals are really important. And I know like some companies, like the opera happens to pull similar like old costumes or like muslins or something for actors to wear during tech so that they can figure out how to move in the type of costume that they're going to be in before they're actually getting into the final thing. So if like, okay, you're going to be wearing a long skirt and you're a person who's never worn long skirts, we need you to practice not tripping over it before you get into the final expensive costume. Yeah.
Rehearsal skirts are
rehearsal skirts.
Super important, especially if they're going to be like shaped or a period skirt where you've got more hip here or more butt there. And you're not used to having, you know, 2 foot wide hips or a butt that follows you around like a dog.
Yeah.
Or a train. Oh my God, trains.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
walking a train anymore?
Yeah, really. Like, who wears a train?
Oh, there's
most women
where
only wear them one day out of their life, and that's it. Unless they're reenacting, unless they're reenactors, and then of course they teach themselves and they know what to do with it.
There's
but
that
average person one day.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I guess we've kind of gotten like the wardrobe supervisor role is really where you take that. All the costumes come in to the theater and you have all the paperwork in front of you and you have to then divide everything out and organize it in such a way that it matches the paperwork, but also is efficient for your dressers to be able to help people get dressed in a timely manner. So that's what my job is really a lot of organization. It's really funny to me because people hear you work backstage and they're like, it's so glamorous. And I'm like, yeah, I do organizing and laundry. But
so much laundry.
So much laundry. That's like 50% of my job. But that's, I mean, so before the show opens, like I'm the one who's on hand for tech rehearsals, finding out if people's shoes are going to fit them or if they're a problem, like, oh, this person's getting blisters. This person, they didn't put rubber on the bottom of the shoes. So now they're slipping and sliding all over the stage, like stuff like that. Super fun. You know, on hand for that, but also setting up dressing rooms, making sure that everybody has a place. And even some of that can get complicated because you think it's just, okay, like put everybody in alphabetically. But sometimes like, oh, so-and-so and the guy who's next to him alphabetically hate each other. You can't sit them next to each other. Or so-and-so is a really big dude. And if you put him in the back corner, he's going to be super uncomfortable, like stuff like that. So there's
or these two women will literally kill each other if you put them in the same dressing room. Don't do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is some learning curve of like knowing your actors and such too, especially if you're in the same place for a while and you have a recurring cast of people. But yeah, so I mean, setting that up and then setting up costumes and like I always enforce like your costumes have to be hung like facing to the left.
Tits to the left.
Tits to the left every time. All costumes, everything, no matter what it is, for the men, for the women, I don't care if it's a skirt or a top or whatever, the front goes to the left. And also they need to be hung in the order that they're going to be worn through the show, because that saves a lot of headache for everybody involved. Because I like these actors, in theory, they've had all these fittings, they know exactly what they're wearing, and in theory they should know more or less when they're wearing it, and they'll still come in and I'll be like, I don't know what I'm putting on. so you yeah. have to have an organization that helps them as well. And of course, you know, your dressers have paperwork, but if it's like the first dress rehearsal, they're still trying to figure it out too. And if you have everything mixed up, it doesn't make their jobs any easier. And that's supposed to be part of the wardrobe supervisor job, is, you know, making your dressers' lives manageable as much as possible. But it's also like, once the show gets into dress rehearsals and people are actually in costume, like I'm constantly running all over the place backstage during dress rehearsals, making sure that everybody's where they need to be, making sure that, you know, there's not like, oh, we are missing somebody's bra, or, you know, stuff like that, or, oh, this strap on the shirt just snapped, or, you know, anything like that. But then I'm also getting text messages from the costume coordinator and the designer and the head of the wardrobe department, who are all sitting in the audience watching, and they're like, oh, get rid of this when this person comes off stage. We hate their scarf. Or, oh, when she comes off stage, I need you to throw a hat on her because the director wants to see what it looks like. Or, oh, hey, please take a note that there's like this giant rip that all of a sudden appeared.
Or Mr. So-and-so's cuff of his pants keeps getting tucked into the heel of his shoe and we don't know why.
Exactly. Yeah. Can you please investigate that when he comes off stage? Figure out if there's a quick reason that can be fixed, or if we need to make something permanent.
The solution was putting suspenders on the pants.
There you go. Yeah. Dress rehearsals are always super fun though, and it's a lot of running around and problem solving and being a chicken with your head cut off, but also keeping track of everybody and everything all at the same time. And yeah, I mean, for every show, people, you know, probably don't think about paperwork. And actually, I know people don't think about paperwork, because I was in the middle of a show one time and somebody higher up in management at this particular place decided, she doesn't need to have permissions to access the files on the computer. Like, you don't need any of this. And I was in the middle of a show and I was like, I need to reprint paperwork because everything changed after the dress rehearsal yesterday. And I have to get all this paperwork to my dressers and I can't access it. What the heck? And I'm like, you know, I'm like having to call everybody like, why don't I have access to this? And am I doing something wrong? What's broken? And then like, I had like, the person that had made the decision that like, oh, you don't need the access, came down finally like 2 hours later to talk to me and was like, wait, why do you need access to this paperwork? And I was like, do you see my 2-inch thick notebook here that I keep all of this stuff in? This is how I run the show. So yeah, people sometimes just don't understand like how much all of that is important to us. I mean, every dress rehearsal, I print out new paperwork for running the show for my dressers. You know, you always have to bring a highlighter, a pen, etc. You're always making notes. It's, yeah, because it's going to change.
Yeah. Speaking of paperwork on that, just to inform our listeners on how poorly run that show was that Heather and Madeline were talking about, I was too on that show. And I was told that I didn't need a script, to a point where I gave up asking for a script and just backed off from pretending that I needed to know what was going on in any capacity. And at some point they lost their stage manager and they were like, oh my God, we have to cancel the show. And I'm like, I can call your show. What, you know, can I have a script? And It was just a real crazy, crazy show. But I was just like, you know what? If you don't think I need a script, then I'm just going to say, I don't need a script. I was trying to get scripts out to your technicians because I'm your technical director, but I don't need a script. All right. Yeah, they're...
I think the things that like they don't think we need to do our jobs because our jobs are just clothes or in between theaters where they might be used to costumes, because I've done this for many years before I started working more professionally. There's many theaters where you are the one person doing everything. You're doing the alterations, the sewing, the shopping, the whole shebang, and you get to tech, and they don't think the costume department needs a table in the space. And I'm like, okay, A, if I don't have a team, if you want me to watch the show and fix the costumes for the next scene, I need space to work. B, this computer in front of me is because I'm writing down all these changes and updating the paperwork for your crew, or virtually shopping the shirt you want tomorrow because you want to change this entire look, or, you know, or researching or going back to the script and telling you why I made that decision based exactly on these notes that you gave me last time. So that the amount of time that you need to sit, like, yeah, I'm in the house and I might be messaging poor Madeline and her backstage for me. And also a big part of that is often because we might see that coat once, and by the end of the night, we're run so close to time, they release the actors and we won't have them in that coat again till the minute they walk back on stage the next night. So you have to, like, everyone is like doing that running back and forth and back and forth and fixing things and grabbing things and doing things, because you can't, you have to fight for just like the quick changes. Like when you build the schedule tomorrow, I often say to stage manager, I need 10 minutes with this person if you want this thing fixed.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're going to release them at 11 o'clock, we're going to do tech notes till midnight. I'm going to go home and type up all my notes. I'm going to probably go shopping. And you call the actors, you want them on stage immediately. I'm like, that will never get fixed if I can't put it on their body when it's not in the middle of a quick change. Like that's the kind of thing, like fighting for, they don't understand that things magically can't happen without a body, that we need space to do our job. Just because we're not running a show on a machine like sound or lights doesn't mean we don't need space to continue keeping things moving forward. Yeah, final dress, I maybe walk around the house with a notepad just taking quick notes on little things, but when it's a show that big, like, you know, Madeline's running her paperwork, or whoever's working backstage, depending on what the show is running their paperwork, but I'm still keeping notes of everything that we need to fix and adjust and change or updating. That's the first time I've sat down in 6 days and I'm going back and I'm saying, okay, this is the final look that went on this person. We got to make the final archival Bible work, you know, piece list for the next person or for the tour or whatever, like getting it passed to the next step. So there's a lot of that kind of, you know, fighting for our needs.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. The most infuriating phrase in the world from a non-costumer or non-person doing your job, I'm sure, is, well, can't you just insert whatever thing here? It's no, like, can't you just not tell me how to do my job?
Yeah.
My favorite.
Can we try that?
On a show we've been talking about is... We had two extremely different sized women from the original cast to the new cast. Like, you know, amazingly talented, phenomenal woman, but she was a plus size woman and no one in the Broadway cast was over size 6. And they kept saying, why do you need all this time and money to build her a new costume? Can't you just alter something?
No.
And I was like, no. It doesn't matter if there was a seam allowance to let out. There's physically not the proportionate length and width, and the pieces are different shaped for a different size person. These dresses won't go up 2 sizes, let alone 10.
No, you cannot change the laws of physics.
Exactly. Why does she need her own corset? She's only 10 times larger. Like,
and it's like, I want her to look beautiful, but we need to invest in new materials because we just don't have anything that's right for her.
Yeah.
And that, and like the, can't you just use something we already have? I'm like, no.
No,
I am not going to change the laws of space, time, and physics and fashion for you.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes
it's for no one.
And sometimes it's not even that. It's like Heather kind of said something a little bit that sparked my about fighting for quick changes. And I've had times as the wardrobe supervisor where I have had to fight to keep literal seconds of a quick change because the director decides, oh, well, I want, like, originally this was a 2-minute change, which, you know, depending on how complicated the change is, can be quick or, you know, kind of a normal change. And then all of a sudden they're like, now it's going to be 10 seconds and we still need them to do this complete change. And you're like, you're going to have to rethink that because I cannot get this down to under 30 seconds because mm-hmm. it is that complicated. I mean, I have done some crazy quick changes, taken somebody from a loincloth to a full 18th century butler look in literally 30 seconds. I have done that. But even I am not that good, yeah. you know, I can't do this in 10 seconds. I can't do this in 2 seconds. Like, you have to work with the laws of reality here.
Or your cast and crew get really good at their scene changes. And suddenly the scene change is going faster than the costume change. You get to final dress and they suddenly miss their costume change for the first time in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you need to slow down that couch by about 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I've noticed, take especially your time, for your job, Madeline, slowly. There is so much diplomacy. Oh my God.
Yes. Yes. There's definitely a lot of knowing how to talk to people.
You have on your stat sheet, but that's probably a lot.
I never even thought about that, honestly. But yeah, it does take a lot of diplomacy. Because, like, mostly I haven't had issues. You know, most people are understanding, but, like, I have had times. I talked about this, you know, previously, where, like, I walked into a stage meeting after the first dress rehearsal. And I said, I need 2 more dressers and I need them here in the morning. And, like, I had to be able to fight for that. You know, I had to be able to put it in such a way that my needs were understood and that they understood that I was serious about it and that I wasn't just, you know, making excuses or whatever, but also being, you know, respectful about the fact that that's the director that you're talking to. Yeah. And as much as we want to believe in some ways there's not a hierarchy, there really is. Yeah. So
I think that's really important for anyone in the team to, like, I've been like an assistant designer, but I was hired within the shop for a show. Mm-hmm. So I was their design assistant, but I was doing the job as the, as like assistant to the designer. And the designer was from out of town and the work was very good, but it was all over designed, over budget. And there was a big rift between the designer and the shop manager. And so that tension can build. And then having worked with designers who work really hard to get along with the shop and then also kind of get into fittings, and they, even if they have a very kind of picky, particular design aesthetic, are capable of making quick decisions because they know it keeps things moving. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, being in those environments as a designer, I always emphasize, both for myself when I work, but also for when I'm talking to young designers, the importance of, you have to have your team's back and you have to build that relationship first, because your shop and your crew are going to, if they trust you to have their back, they're going to help you get your design realized without, you know, in a more positive way and in smoother, because you're making smooth decisions. You're being conscientious, and because as the designer, often the one has to go make the fight to the director for things to change or to happen, or being the one, like, who's got to negotiate a lot of different personalities. You're in a fitting with one actor, the actor who says something about the way that something makes them feel. And you go to the director and the director's like, well, I want you to do this. I'm like, so the actor is not comfortable with this, but without, like, really relaying personal information, but finding a way to negotiate everyone's comfort.
Yeah. Because sometimes the director wants them to do a full change on stage where they get down to their underwear and the actor is not comfortable being in their underwear on stage. And sometimes they will only tell their dresser or their wardrobe supervisor that, and then you have to be the one to pull it up the chain to where that information actually needs to go. Well, and we've barely even, I mean, we've mentioned dressers a bunch of times, but in some ways we've not really touched on what that job is, which I'm assuming all three of us have done it. I know that Allison and I both have. Heather, have you been a dresser on shows?
Not for long running shows, but I have done it a few times. I've done it kind of as over hire one-offs and things like that, but enough to,
But basically, like, for it is what it sounds like. You're the person putting the clothes on and off of the people
and making sure they're wearing all the things that they're supposed to wear every time, consistently, and the same way. And there's some diplomacy that goes into, you know, that too, because say a designer decides, you know, they need to have this added and they're in their actor brain and they don't want to, you know, change anything because actors can be creatures of habit. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. They don't like for you to mess with their process and their stuff once it's set. And it's all of a sudden, no, we actually have to, you know, change your socks or you have to wear suspenders now or something like that. So you have to go what my very first wardrobe supervisor called introduce the new thing.
Yes.
And be like, hey, so we've noticed that your pant cuff gets caught in the heel of your shoe. What's happening there? Because I'm checking. Okay. So when you go backstage, you actually sit in a chair for 15 minutes while you're waiting to go on stage. That makes sense. Okay, so we're going to put suspenders on you because that will hitch them up enough that you can sit down and stand back up without that happening anymore. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you always have to approach it from the point of I'm helping you.
Yes.
Because, yeah, definitely you have to be like, hey, so I've noticed this thing. And is it bothering you? Because I would like to help you fix that problem. And here is the solution that we've thought of.
Yes.
Definitely a lot of negotiating egos. And I say a lot of times that like your wardrobe and hair and makeup people are your therapists backstage.
Therapist, personal assistant.
Yes.
You know, if you don't like people,
it's not the job for you.
You're not going to do well as a dresser.
No, no.
And there are some people who are dressers where I just kind of look at them and I'm like,
why are you a dresser?
Why are you doing this?
Yeah. There's definitely nobody some people that you question. And of course, then there's all the, there is hierarchy within the dressers as well. You know, some people only dress principal actors and they will throw a fit if they're assigned to the chorus or, you know, something like that. And
they don't want actors or performers to be able to request people.
Yeah.
And then they get their nose bent out of shape when somebody gets a request specifically to work with a principal. We won't name names.
No, there's no need for that. But,
yeah.
But,
sorry.
But yeah, I mean, there is. But sometimes too, like you also have to think about, you have to know your dressers if they're people that you have like a consistent list to work with. Because that's part of my job as well, is assigning dressers to particular tracks, which sometimes means to a specific actor, to multiple actors, to like a whole group of people, or even if it changes throughout the show, like you're mostly working with one person, but then we have the entire chorus changing and we need all hands on deck, you know?
Right.
You also have to get to know the abilities of your dressers. Yeah. And so there are some
who can
people,
and can't work with children too.
There is that. Yeah. But it's also like sometimes my best dressers are with the chorus because the chorus has the most craziness going on. So like you might be the best dresser on the show, but you're not with the main actor because the main actor wears one outfit the whole time and I need you on the 30 quick changes, you know? So.
And you have to know your performers and who can change their clothes consistently and with speed and accuracy, because you'd be surprised how many people can't change their clothes quickly with accuracy.
Full front breeches. Every time you have to explain to men how to put them on. And what's really astounding to me is I have had to explain to a male dancer the quickest way to put on tights before. Like, this is your profession.
That drives me crazy. Like watching some of these male dancers who have done this their entire lives. And it's like, did nobody ever teach you how to put on tights? Why are you stepping into them like they're yoga pants? That makes no sense.
Like,
and
seriously.
It's like, my mom taught me at 5 years old how to put on pantyhose.
Yeah.
Not even that hard.
It's insane. Like, yeah, sorry. You really think, I think a lot of people outside, they're like, why do you need a dresser? Like, who the hell needs help getting dressed? And you're like, you would be surprised many times I have seen fall front breeches put on backwards or the fall is not even buttoned up and they're just going on stage with their junk hanging out.
Oh my God. I had a man, grown ass Broadway actor, forget his boxers. knowing that he was about to go into awkward bedroom scene number two.
Oh no.
Where he would be standing in his boxers. So what ended up happening was he had a quick change where we, you know, take off the suit, we take off the shirt, we take off the shoes, and underneath he's supposed to have an A-line, mm-hmm. pair of boxers, sock garters, because sock garters are inherently funny, let's just face it, and yeah. socks. So we've done this several times. Everything is fine. And it's after intermission, so he puts all this stuff on during intermission. And he's a grown-ass man, so, you know, he should know what he's wearing. So one day, so we're in rehearsal, and I get the pants off, I get the shoes off, you know, I'm throwing stuff, and all of a sudden I hear him screaming, F-F-F-F-F-F-F. And I look up thinking he thinks I've forgotten to bring his fresh A-line because he's sweaty. And I turn with the A-line to hand it to him. He is standing there with his A-line, his dripping wet A-line in one hand, nothing in the other, staring at it. And in his little tidy underpants that he would use instead of a dance belt, and the sock garters and the socks, no boxers.
At least he had something.
And I froze. I was like, everything is wrong. He runs back to his dressing room, grabs boxers, runs back, hops in the bed, and proceeds to start putting them on. And so I like snap out of it. I run over with his water and his shirt, and he's like struggling into it as the actress who, speaking of actresses who don't want to do a quick change in front of people, so she had to run all the way back to the changing room and all the way back to hop in the bed, you know. So we made it through and everything, and you know, they go off on the bed, and I come back and I'm sorting everything through. I'm waving, you know, like a traffic cop, you know, all the actors through, and my supervisor comes in and he's like, okay, so what happened? And I explained and he said, okay, so what did we learn from this? That grown-ass men will forget their underwear.
So yeah,
let's find a solution. So every night I would fold in the order he was supposed to put them on: his socks, his sock garters, his boxers, his shirt, in a little pile in his chair, and it never happened again.
Yeah, you definitely have to figure out your quirks of your individual actors, because some of them, they want everything hung. Some of them need them piled in a specific order.
Some of them want you to change their pocket square for them.
Yeah.
And then they get proud of themselves the night that they realize, oh, she dresses like five other people. I'm going to change my pocket square all on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you're so cute. Up on you.
Convincing a
you're
third
old enough
lead.
To be my father.
Convincing a third lead that he doesn't need his own dresser when he has no quick changes, when you've got 25 people who've got 100 quick changes and three dressers.
Uh-huh.
He's like, well, who's going to help me with my change? I'm like, nobody.
You yourself and you.
Yeah. You,
someone can meet you on the other side of the stage with a cloak when you got to go on and off again real quick.
Yeah.
But during the scene change, you got time for a full change. You can go do it yourself.
Yeah. You have 15 minutes. Everybody else has 30 seconds. You can handle this yourself. I will meet you on the side of the stage and check that you're okay. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of ego to negotiate, but that's part of what makes it fun.
Yep.
Well, ladies, this has been amusing. This has been fun. This has brought back so many memories for me of my days in theater. And I want to express to you that you've reminded me that what I did in theater plays a large role in how well I do my job in corporate. It really did translate and help me be a better person in the corporate world. We do run into some of these things sometimes. And I want to hit a couple points real quick. We have to wrap this up, I know, because Heather has another engagement in just a few moments. That we realized a few things here. It's very important to have paperwork in all departments, across all boards, across all facets of our industry. I don't care who you are. Paperwork is important. Yeah, it is important. It's also important everywhere to fight for what you need. That time that you need in the wardrobe department, that time that you need as an audio person, as a lighting person, as a scenic person, as a props person, you do need to step up and say, hey, I was an audio engineer. Hey, I do need a moment with that person on stage in that spot because I've had issues and I need to make sure that I can make, you know, that I've fixed everything and it works. I need that moment with that person. Fighting for what you need is important and it's respected by your directors and your stage management. They may not like it because they have their own ideas of what the time is going to happen, but they do realize that it's important. So if you irritated them, it's not because of you, it's because of time and their own pressures. So always fight for what you need. And understanding that there is crossover in every department can affect another department in our industry, no matter what facet of the industry we're talking about. Wardrobe and microphones and lighting, it all has effect on each department. I want to thank you ladies for being here. I got out of this, what I expected to get out of this was a refreshed understanding of what happened in wardrobe. And what I got was humor and I'm giving you sympathies because I learned even more about the trials and tribulations that go on in wardrobe. And thank you again for this. Madeline, this was a great idea. Fantastic. Allison, thank you for being here. Heather, good to You're see welcome. You again. I hope we can do this again sometime, ladies. All right, ladies. And I would love to continue this, but I think we need to do it another time. I know Heather has to go. So thank you all. No, don't be sorry. It happens. We are all busy on the other things too. Thanks, Allison. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madeline.
Bye. Right.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us.
Join us.
Join us.
On Feed the Crew.